Friday, everybody. Welcome to my program. This is Mike Cutler speaking with you this evening, and this, of course, is the Michael Cutler Hour. Always great to join you at the end of the week. Hope you've all had a wonderful, productive, enjoyable week, and here we are trying to make sense of the lunacy that passes for the daily news of the day and for what goes on in our country. For those of you who are familiar with me, you know that generally my focus is on the immigration issue. And by the way, it's important to note that immigration is not a single issue, but a singular issue, because it impacts virtually every challenge and threat that not only our nation, but that our citizens confront on a daily basis, whether we're talking about national security, whether we're talking about crime and criminal justice and community safety, the economy, the environment, health care, public health, education, the unemployment problem, far more than a problem for all too many Americans, then you quickly have to realize that immigration is a major factor in each and every one of those challenges and a significant number of other ones. But we'll stay focused on these particular challenges. Those of you who are familiar with me know that I spent 30 years with what used to be the Immigration and Naturalization Service. All of my career was in New York. And as a New Yorker, I could tell you that tragically, upsettingly, I don't know what the words are, I had a front row seat to the terrorist attacks of 9/11. And it was those attacks that prompted me to decide to take my show on the road, provide the perspectives, the knowledge, the insight that my 30-year career with the INS provided me with. I've done a bunch of congressional hearings, and I'm not going to go into all of that with you today. But if you're not familiar with my background, you want to learn more about me, please go to my website, michaelcutler.net. I also write for a wonderful organization, Californians for Population Stabilization. Their terrific website is capsweb.org, C-A-P-S, capsweb.org. And now we're into something really and truly new and exciting. I have become the senior immigration editor for an online magazine known as AND Magazine, A-N-D Magazine. My website on AND Magazine is talkborder.com. Boy, I almost sounded like a real New Yorker there. It's talkborder.com. I've actually just shot a couple of video segments for what will ultimately be a 30-minute-a-week program where I will bring on guests, where we will discuss the issues. Well, we're going to take a hard look at the immigration crisis and all of its guises, where I will answer the tough questions, because, you know, I'm a great believer that anybody can be as foolish as he or she wants to be when they're sitting in a restaurant having a cup of coffee with a couple of close friends, or perhaps having a couple of ice-cold beers with a couple of buddies at the bar or a tavern. But if you're going to be on national television or radio or go before Congress or get up on a stage and take a position of advocacy, then you need to be made accountable. And I don't believe, and I'm sure many of you out there don't believe, that the news media does an adequate job of making certain people accountable. We hear a mythology that passes for the news. We hear so many stories about immigration and even the way that the news is covered, you'd never even realize that immigration is a serious issue. We hear about people who want to simply work in the United States, and of course that by itself is a serious enough problem. But it's also about national security. It's also about keeping out the criminals. It's also about the fact that crime begets crime. When aliens run our borders, they violate the law. They violate the very inspections process that was designed by members of Congress and prior administrations going back decades to keep bad guys out of our country. You know, simply stated, the immigration laws that have been trivialized by this administration, unlike any prior administration, have two very significant goals, and I would love someone to tell me how any elected representative, how any government official could make light of laws that at their basic fundamental purpose for existence are designed and intended to save American lives and save American jobs. Especially in this era of economic uncertainty where we have record rates of foreclosure, especially in this perilous era where we continually wage a war against terrorists, against the cartels who peddle drugs on street corners from coast to coast and border to border, where other transnational criminals ply their trades across our nation, where we see communities and states declaring themselves to be sanctuaries. A couple of weeks ago, I had a gentleman on my program. I had met him on the Vince Daniels show, Don Rosenberg. We've become friends. His son tragically was killed by an alien who may have been illegal. It's remarkable how the government will not disclose information about aliens who become involved in crime. They certainly will disclose information about American citizens who become involved in crime. But this individual had no driver's license, ran down the 25-year-old son of you know, Don's son, second-year law student, a great kid with what should have been a brilliant future in front of him, ran him down with his car, and in an effort to flee, didn't injure him seriously during the initial impact, wound up driving over this young man three times. And when they did some investigation, they found that the day before his car had been impounded because he was driving without a license, and the discovery was made when police realized he was driving the wrong way on a one-way street. But, of course, California has this new policy that they will no longer impound the cars of unlicensed drivers because, God forbid, they might inconvenience illegal aliens who need to go to their jobs. Stop and think about this. The point of the immigration laws is to try to preserve American jobs. Prior to the Second World War, the immigration laws were the responsibility of the United States Department of Labor, not the Justice Department. The authority for enforcing and administering the immigration laws switched from the Labor Department to the Justice Department because of the Second World War and the recognition, the understanding of our true leaders back then, unlike so many of these characters who call themselves our leaders today. They understood that if the bad guys, the Nazis, came to America, they could do damage to us. And in fact, if you go to the FBI website, and I've written articles about it, it's on my website, michaelcutler.net, it's on capsweb.org. I talked about whether or not we even need a military if we're not willing to secure our own borders. What was so remarkable was that there were eight Nazis who were picked up who had entered the United States via a submarine, both on Long Island, four on Long Island, four more, if I have the numbers correct, in Florida. All but two of those individuals were put on trial, found guilty of espionage and sabotage as war combatants, were executed. Two of these knuckleheads were ultimately put in jail. One guy drew a 30-year jail sentence. The other guy got life in prison. It was a serious matter. They understood. The government understood. You had saboteurs coming to America to destroy our capacity to manufacture munitions and other essential products to support the war effort in Europe. And in an effort to prevent America from being able to help its allies, these individuals were sent here to destroy factories. They came with explosives and so forth. Today, we're waging a war on terror. The casualty count, by the way, from the attacks of 9/11 versus Pearl Harbor are almost identical, 3,000 people. Except if you look at how many Americans are now suffering the medical consequences of their exposures to the toxins when the towers came down in the heart of New York City's lower Manhattan area, you realize that the casualty numbers are much higher. And while Hawaii was a U.S. possession during the Second World War, or before the Second World War, New York City is in the heart of the United States financial world. In fact, the towers cast shadows onto Wall Street. So here we have this incredible attack by terrorists on our land. The Pentagon got struck, people killed there. An airplane went down in Pennsylvania, people killed there, all on 9/11. And yet it's being treated today like a bad demonstration, maybe spray-painted graffiti. You know, oh, yes, it's convenient to talk about the war on terror when efforts are made to abridge our expectations of privacy and freedom. Gosh, we have a war on terror. But on the other hand, don't do anything to impede commerce. Don't do anything to impede trade. Let's not only maintain the visa waiver program, let's expand the visa waiver program. And I want to talk briefly about the visa waiver program. I know I've spoken about it in the past, but I think it bears repeating. For those of you who fly frequently or at all, you know that the inspections that we undergo by TSA are increasingly intrusive. I've jokingly said that they could probably combine Obamacare with the TSA so that when you get on an airplane, you could have your colonoscopy and chest x-ray and mammogram and so forth, because that's almost how intrusive some of these examinations are of people simply trying to get on board airplanes. We know we have to take our shoes off because a British subject by the name of Richard Reed, just weeks after the attacks of 9/11, attempted to bring down an airliner that was en route from Europe to Florida by concealing explosives in his shoes. Fortunately, he failed to detonate the shoes, and he was taken into custody and put on trial. But the point was, the lesson was clear. You could hide explosives in shoes. So that's where we are now. We have to take our shoes off. But I don't know if you know this, Richard Reed, as a British citizen, was not required to get a visa before seeking to enter the United States, before getting on board that airliner. Well, guess what? Not only is the visa waiver program alive and well, and back when Reed got on that airplane, somewhere around 26 or 27 countries participated in the visa waiver program. In the years that followed the attacks of 9/11, in the years that followed the Richard Reed effort to bring down that airliner, the number of visa waiver countries has been expanded to 36. So the number of visa waiver countries has gone up. The president recently talked about the need to make it easier for citizens of China and Brazil to get visas to come to the United States, ostensibly so they could be good tourists and spend their money and go to hotels, go to Broadway, go to baseball games, and buy trinkets. Good for business, good for the economy. But meanwhile, think about the national security implications. Now, what's really remarkable is that there is a program that is heavily funded by the Chamber of Commerce. I call them the Chamber of Horrors, backed up by the hotel and hospitality industries, now further being supported by manufacturers, I guess the folks that make the sweatshirts and the trinkets. And this is called the Discover America Partnership. Let's do everything we can to take down our borders to make it as easy as possible for foreign nationals, people that are rightfully referred to as aliens, and we'll get to that term alien in a moment. But let's bring all these folks here so they could spend their money and we could make a profit. But meanwhile, by making it that much easier for folks to come here, we're also making it that much easier for the bad guys to come here and ultimately attack us. So we're willing to learn, our government, that is willing to learn some of the lessons, but not all the lessons. They're willing to learn that you can hide explosives in shoes, but willing to ignore the fact that the visa process can provide a very valuable layer of security to keep the terrorists out of our country, to keep the terrorists off of our airplanes. I don't know if you know this, but if an individual gets on board an airplane that's going foreign, that's going to fly to another country, if that person needs to have a visa, but if they don't have the appropriate visa in their passport, the airline is not supposed to let them on board the airplane, because if they do, and that person comes to, let's say, the United States, the airline gets fined for allowing somebody on the airplane who should not have been allowed on in the first place, because somebody who requires a visa and doesn't have one, under the law, is inadmissible. So the airline has a level of responsibility. Well, if Richard Reed needed a visa, couldn't have gotten one. If you look at the pictures of what he looked like on the day he was arrested, I think you'd have to be unconscious if you were a State Department official, and this guy showed up looking for a visa, if they gave him a visa. I mean, it's just incomprehensible. Well, then Richard Reed never could have gotten on board that airplane. But, you know, we have the Chamber of Commerce saying, oh, no, no, we have this Discover America partnership. As I've often pointed out, what they seem to have forgotten is that Al-Qaeda has already discovered America. So you look at the crazy stuff that's happening. You look at the presidential campaign that's ramping up. Mitt Romney appears to be the heir apparent to the nomination. I hope he gets the message properly, because this administration has gone literally off the rails. The wheels have come off their wagon, and the wheels are coming off of our democracy. I want to talk about two of the articles that I recently wrote. And I think these are very important articles. First of all, I want to talk about an individual who came to the United States from Jamaica. And, you know, if you go to the ICE website, Immigration and Customs Enforcement website, you can see all their news releases where they tout their successes, all the great cases they've made, the people they've locked up, the dope that they've seized. and on. And that's fine. I think it makes sense. If you are in business, you want to be able to crow about what you're doing with taxpayer money. Look, we're giving you your money's worth, and here we got this guy. And here's the headline. New York man pleads guilty to weapons and aggravated identity theft charges. Very clear statement. Right on the money. Bango. New York man pleads guilty. Well, I want you to understand that that was the headline at the ICE website. When you see the words New York man, does that not conjure up somebody like myself who was born in New York City? New York man. I mean, what's a New York man? Well, when you read the actual press release, it's not until you get to the third paragraph that you realize that we're talking about somebody who, in fact, was a citizen of Jamaica. Let me read that paragraph. The defendant also had two New York State driver's licenses, a Social Security card, and a District of Columbia certificate of birth in his possession at the time of arrest. The driver's licenses were different names, but both bore the defendant's laminated photograph. The investigation determined that the defendant was, in fact, a Jamaican national who was unlawfully in the United States. Anderson, that's the guy's name, had obtained and used someone else's birth certificate and Social Security card in order to create a new false identity. At one point in the scheme, the defendant submitted a petition to the Supreme Court of the state of New York in Monroe County to change one of his alias names to match that of a name belonging to a real United States citizen. Paragraph 3 is where they finally make the disclosure that the guy they arrested was in fact a citizen of Jamaica who was illegally present in the United States? Shouldn't that have been the headline? I mean, goodness, if I was at ICE writing the headlines, I would have said, illegal Jamaican pleads guilty to weapons and aggravated ID theft charges. Because that's really the issue, that this guy who was an illegal alien not only had weapons, which, you know, anyone could do that, could be motivated to have weapons, and he had heavy-duty weapons with sophisticated sights and all kinds of stuff. I mean, these were heavy-duty weapons. But the crimes that he committed of identity theft and so forth were obviously intended to enable him to operate within our borders as though he was a United States citizen. And in fact, they go on and talk about how he got an enhanced driver's license, which, while it's not a passport, would easily allow him to travel to Canada, Mexico, and other countries within the Western Hemisphere. And he tried to get a U.S. passport, but that application was knocked down. So clearly, if this guy committed these crimes because he was an illegal alien, it's not just incidental to the story. Oh, by the way, the guy who robbed the bank had blue eyes. You know, okay, fine, it's a minor issue. The root cause for most of the crimes that this guy committed that ICE is happy to crow about were caused or motivated by the fact that we were dealing with an illegal alien who was trying to pass himself off as a United States citizen. His being an illegal alien was an intrinsic part of his crimes, an intrinsic part of the prosecution. But yet you had to go to paragraph 3. Because we have an administration that will do everything and anything in its power to obfuscate the impact of illegal immigration. Identity theft is not a victimless crime. Ask anybody who's had their identity stolen, and they will tell you that it puts them through hell. It destroys their credit ratings. It does all kinds of damage to them. People who have had, who suffer identity theft, and there are millions who have suffered it in this country, I'm not going to say it's only because of illegal aliens, but I can assure you that a significant percentage of identity theft is now committed because we have so many millions of illegals in our country. This is a life-altering crime. This is worse than having your home burglarized, arguably, because they've stolen your name. They've stolen your Social Security number. They've stolen who you are. And it's happening because we have borders that exist only on maps. It's happening because when aliens violate the visas for which they were admitted or under which they were admitted into our country, or if it's the visa waiver program, they've stayed longer than they're supposed to, they took a job they weren't supposed to, or if they're students, they failed to attend school. So the crimes they've committed, the violations of law, relate back to the immigration laws. And yet the administration doesn't want to enforce those laws. They have vacated deportation orders on many illegal aliens. There are now some 300,000 who were facing deportation, and the administration has said, well, unless they've been convicted of crimes, we're not going to move against them. We're going to let them stay here, which means they're going to get employment authorization. So let's back up and give this a bit of thought. Every politician who's out there campaigning, it's almost obligatory. What do they say? I want to create the jobs, right? Nobody gets up there and says, I want to destroy jobs. I want to remove jobs. I want to create jobs. Elect me, I will create the jobs. I know how to create jobs, right? How many times have we heard the candidates harp on that? I had the job in the private sector. I was a CEO. I know how to create jobs. Well, that's great. And every now and again, they issue some statistics about how many jobs were created last week. You know, we created 100,000 jobs last week. Wow, I'm underwhelmed. Because right now, there are unknown millions of illegal aliens working in the United States. And I confronted Newt Gingrich when I spoke at the Tea Party convention in South Carolina. Newt was on stage immediately before I was. I bumped into him when I was in the bar that evening, and I approached him, and I walked up to him. We got to speak for about, perhaps 45 seconds. And I asked him, I said, Mr. Speaker, and I told him, I said, I'm a former INS agent. I've done a bunch of congressional hearings. I spoke at the same Tea Party where you did earlier today. I'd love to know why, with all this talk about the need to create jobs, you don't talk about the need to liberate jobs. I said, it's easy to liberate a job. Have immigration agents enforce the immigration laws. It takes time and money to create a job. You may have to build a factory. You may have to build an office building. It takes time to get buildings constructed. It takes time to get money in order to carry out the projects. But if you talk about arresting illegal aliens, you could take illegal aliens out the back door of a factory or an office or wherever they're working. And as they're going out the back door, you could be bringing in a legal workforce, American workers, lawful immigrant workers of every ethnicity, every race, every religion. They could be coming right through the front door and replacing the illegal aliens as they go and get marched out the back door. Now, if there are millions of illegal aliens working in the United States, that means overnight, and you wouldn't have to arrest all the illegals. You would just have to arrest enough of them that you have the deterrent effect, that aliens look at the situation and say, you know what, I don't need this. I'm going to leave before I get caught. Aliens who are thinking about coming to America, if they saw that there was a crackdown, would say, you know what, it's a risky proposition to come to America. We have to spend a lot of money on smugglers or to commit visa fraud. We might go to jail. We might get deported. All the money that I spent will evaporate. So instead of being better off financially, I'm in worse shape if I get deported, because all the money and all the effort that I expended to come to America goes down the drain if I get caught. So you would deter people from coming here. Everyone talks about the fence on the border. This is one of the dopiest debates I've ever heard in my life. We've gotten to the point that the only difference between the candidates is how many troops they want to put on the border and how much electricity they want to run through the fence. Do we need a fence on the border? Yes, we should reinforce the border. We should make it more difficult for aliens to run the border. But if at the end of the day, when aliens run the border and they're then able, no matter what, to go where they want to go and do what they want to do once they're here, then what's the point to the exercise? This is kind of like playing baseball and telling the outfielders to sit out the game. Anybody who could hit an in-the-park home run, or rather, I'm doing this backwards, folks. It's been a long day. Forgive me. Anybody who can hit the ball over the infielder's heads gets an in-the-park home run, because there's no one backstopping the Border Patrol. There's no backstopping the inspectors at the ports of entry who are under the pressure of making a yes or no decision about admitting a foreign national in a minute or less. I know the pressure of that job because for the first 4 years of my career, I sat in an inspections booth at John F. Kennedy International Airport in New York City, and I had bosses who sometimes would literally sit behind you with a stopwatch. I want you to think about that. I don't know what kind of day you've had at work, but imagine the inspector sitting in that booth 20 minutes for lunch, and then maybe putting in a 10 or a 12 or a 14-hour day, and you've got a boss sitting behind you with a stopwatch, and then he will come over to you afterwards, and I had it happen, hey, Mike, you're not doing a good job. You're averaging a minute and 15 seconds per passenger. We want it down to a minute. And if you send too many people out to what they call secondary, where there are inspectors who have the ability to take a little bit more time, maybe do a physical search on the passenger, go through their baggage, look for documents and so forth, if you send too many to secondary, you're not going to curry favor with your bosses either, because at the end of the day, they want to keep the bodies moving. Just like the adjudicators who decide on whether or not to give residency to an alien are under the gun to move the paper. If they don't move the paper quickly enough, the applications quickly enough, they're going to get in trouble with their bosses. And it takes much longer to deny an application for citizenship or residency than it takes to approve it. If you approve an application, all you do is take the approval stamp, smack it on the top of the application, put your initials in a couple of places, staple a couple things together, and move the paper on, and it goes away. But if you want to deny an application, now we're talking about a serious situation. Because now you have to get a report done by an agent who goes out in the street and does an investigation. Then they bring you the report. Now you've got to write your own justification based on the findings of the agent. So an approval probably takes 2 or 3 minutes. A denial can take hours. And if you're being evaluated by how many applications you can process, it's pretty obvious that you're putting your career on the line every time you write a denial. But you don't hear that anywhere. All that we hear about is we're going to go after the employers and we're going to build a fence on the border. That's immigration to 99% of the news media. That's immigration to 99% of the politicians. Nobody talks about the fact that we've had people get citizenship by committing fraud. In one case, a woman committed fraud and then went on to become an FBI and then a CIA agent, all while having committed marriage fraud. And the person who enabled it to commit the marriage fraud wound up being wanted for sending millions of dollars to Hezbollah, which, of course, is a terrorist organization that works in close conjunction with the Iranian government. And we know what a problem we have with Iran with its nuclear program. So we come back again to the nexus between immigration and national security. But you don't hear that on Fox News. You don't hear it on CNN. You're not going to hear it on MSNBC. But I'll tell you where you're going to hear it. You're going to hear it right here on the Michael Cutler Hour. You're also going to hear it on TalkBorder.com as soon as my videos start going up. And in fact, if you go to Ann Magazine this week, they just posted a wonderful interview that I did with a gentleman who's an incredible American. I consider him a friend. His name is Charles S. Faddis, F-A-D-D-I-S. His article on And Magazine, or his website on And Magazine, I love it. I would have stolen it from him if he hadn't already taken it, was The United States of Common Sense. And I was very happy to do his very first program with him, and we talked about the economics of immigration. And in fact, within a week or so, the Social Contract Quarterly, which is a magazine, is due to come out and hit the newsstands, and they'll be posting the articles online. I just wrote an article that runs over 30 pages about the profiteers of illegal immigration. I titled my article, Immigration, the Modern Day Gold Rush. There are many, many, many people making tons of money off of the exploitation of illegal aliens. There are many people making tons of money by making certain that Americans who've gone to college to acquire high-tech educations never get to do those jobs, because we are using so-called temporary work visas, the H-1B visa. I understand they're now using the L-1 visa, the intercompany transferee visas, to make certain that Americans who perhaps have a degree in computer programming or engineering or the high-tech fields are being made to compete with foreign workers from third-world countries who will gladly take the jobs that Americans desperately want, but will take those jobs for substandard wages under substandard conditions and force Americans out of those jobs. I wrote an article in caps, by the way, a while back, and I wrote it on my website, that I called Ellis Island and Other Myths. You see, the point that I made in that article and the point that I made on Charles' terrific program, and again, please go to And Magazine, and you'll see the article or the interview that I did with him. I said, you know, generally, when you have millions of people flooding across international borders, you don't have a prescription for success. You have a prescription for catastrophe. It doesn't usually have a happy ending, that kind of situation. So we're always told America was built by immigrants. We're the land of immigrants. Well, lots of countries have had lots of immigrants, but very often it doesn't lead to success but catastrophe. What made America different was that in America, 100 years ago, we were building our middle class. That's what the distinction was, that you could come here if you got that education, whether it was a formal college education, whether it was that you acquired a trade. My dad was a tradesman, as he loved to point out. He would always say, I'm a plumber by trade. He served an apprenticeship. He was a journeyman, union book carrying plumber. And I'm a fan of trade unions. I know there are problems with unions, and I know there are folks out there who are conservative and hate unions. I want balance in the workplace, folks. I want people who start companies to be able to have every opportunity to be successful in realizing their dreams and build a successful company and earn a good profit. But I also think that the workers who work on those jobs should also have opportunities to support themselves and their families adequately. That's the American dream. And so if you look at where we are with all this, back then, the Labor Department ran immigration to make certain that they shielded American workers from foreign competition, because the understanding was clear. If you flood the labor market with lots of workers, you drive down the price of labor. You drive down the wages. You displace American workers. This is about supply and demand. Very simple, very classic economics. If there's lots of workers to go around, they're all standing in line to do a job, the boss looks at that line and says, you know what, you want a job? I'm not going to pay you what you want. I'm paying you less. And if you won't take the job, there's 100 people standing behind you who will. Well, under that kind of economic pressure, people turn around, look at that big line of people standing behind them, and they say, okay, you win. I'll take a lower salary. Well, it's good for the guy that's trying to squeeze a profit out of his operation, but at the end of the day, when you do this, you destroy the middle class, you don't have the United States or the American dream, because the American dream was about that middle class, that in America, anybody born into a modest or even poor family could aspire to do better by acquiring an education, by acquiring a trade, by acquiring skills, by working hard, by being diligent, by showing some chutzpah, as we say in Brooklyn. You have a little bit of guts, and you could do well. But today, the deck is stacked against the American workforce. We are importing competitors for the American worker, and yet not one politician stands up and says, look, we are inundating our country with foreign workers. We don't have jobs for everybody, but yet we're allowing more people to come here. And not long ago, I was on Neil Cavuto's program, and Neil does a great show. I'm always proud to be on the program with him. And he said, well, Mike, it seems that there's not so many illegal aliens in America today because the arrest statistics are down. And I had jokingly told him that to try to figure out how many illegal aliens are present in the United States by looking at Border Patrol arrest statistics is a bit like trying to take attendance and then asking people not present to raise their hands. What they are doing with the Border Patrol is telling the patrol agents to not arrest illegal aliens, but to turn them around. Turn them around. So instead of arresting all the people that they encounter, as they used to do, they turn them around. So if you look at the arrest statistics, guess what? The numbers are down. And in fact, Daryl Issa, who has the oversight committee in the House, has also accused Janet Napolitano, the head of what I call the Department of Homeland Surrender. Forget Homeland Security. I don't see much security with an open border that we now have. ISIS said, well, you know, you're cooking the books. These are false numbers. So I would argue that the numbers of illegals in our country really haven't declined, that there is still tremendous pressure on that border for ever more people to come here. I was in a very good documentary. I'm very proud to be a part of it. Dennis Lynch was the force behind it. And John Rowland, former Channel 5 news anchor here in New York, was in the film. I have a brief appearance. It's called They Come to America. If you have an opportunity to see it or go to the website, please go to theycometoamerica.com. There's information out there, folks. You may have to dig a little bit to get to it, because I assure you, that the major networks aren't covering the issue. They're not covering the stories. And I don't think it's about the media being liberal. I think it's about the media being corporate. It's about seeking to make certain that the people at the top of the food chain make as much money as possible, even if it means, and obviously it eventually will mean, that we destroy America's middle class. And on the day that America's middle class goes away, America will go away. And I have to tell you, there was a disturbing news report. Someone just sent me a link to it. And Judge Napolitano, not to be confused with Janet Napolitano, Judge Napolitano on Fox News was talking about how now it is a felony to protest in front of the president or anybody who is getting Secret Service protection. It is a felony to stand there and wave a sign that says to the president, you know, you're a jerk, or I don't like what you're doing, or you're getting it wrong. In theory, you could now be arrested and charged with a felony for doing that in front of the president. And when I got the news release, it was sent to me by somebody who communicates with me fairly regularly. My first reaction was, oh, yes, it's another one of those urban myths, and there's certainly a lot of those floating around on the internet. We've all seen them. This does not appear to be an urban myth. The First Amendment is critical to the United States. The concept of freedom of speech, the right to seek redress of grievances, freedom of religion, freedom of press, the right to peaceably assemble. Why do you think the Founding Fathers thought it was so important to have the right to peaceably assemble? Because they understood that if you're truly going to have a democratic government, that there has to be an ability for people to confront one another peaceably and have an interchange of ideas, have the debate, have the argument, have the disagreement. At the time of the founding of this great nation, the only way to have that debate, the discourse, the argument, the disagreement, was to do it live and in person, face to face. And they were just saying, let's be civil about it. Let's not just go out there and beat each other up. That was what they had said. And that, in fact, was what this was all about, that you wanted to be able to go out there and have that conversation and make yourself heard. So in any event, this is where we now stand. Are we going to be able to have this discourse, or are we going to be in a situation where we can no longer have our voices heard, where we can no longer have the discourse that's so essential? And absolutely, this needs to be done. It's not being done. And you have to ask yourself, why isn't it being done that way? Why aren't we supposed to do this? Well, it's obvious that our government is trying to suppress the debate, the discussion. Really and truly, what worries me is that we are suppressing the democratic process. And we as Americans have been very slow to react to what's been going on. More people are more concerned with watching Dancing with the Stars or some reality program than paying attention to what's happening in Washington. That's really what we need to be paying attention to. If you're listening to my program, I want to believe that you're actually paying attention to the issues and you're seeking to find the facts. For those of you joining me a little bit late, this is Mike Cutler, and this is my program, the Michael Cutler Hour. And I'm talking about how our government is failing to truly be a government of the people, by the people, for the people. If you're listening to me, I hope that you have a curiosity, or hopefully even on a larger scale or greater degree, a desire to make changes, to get our government back on track to truly be a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. If you're sitting out there and you've never written a letter to a member of Congress, if you've never made a phone call to your city councilman, if you've never arranged a meeting with somebody who works for your governor, then you're failing as a citizen of this country, because that's the responsibility that we have. As Americans, we have an obligation to get our voices heard. Now, this is going to take some work on your part. You have got to go out there. You've got to study the issues. You've got to know when you're being deceived. Unfortunately, in this day and age, we're almost always being deceived. I've jokingly said when I've been on other people's programs that the ideal candidate for the presidency would probably be David Copperfield, because then at least we would have a professional illusionist in the Oval Office, because that seems to be all that we're getting today. You know, if you want to talk about illusions and false statements and mythology and propaganda, let's go back to that story that I started to talk about the guy who was arrested and prosecuted for having the weapons possessions, the so-called New York man who in reality was an illegal alien from Jamaica. The way that his crimes came to light was when his wife called local police and said, "My husband has guns in the house and I'm afraid of him." They responded to a domestic dispute complaint, and those sheriff's deputies, I believe it was a sheriff deputy, contacted ICE and said, "You know, there's something going on with this guy. You need to help us with this." If they had never contacted ICE when they responded to that complaint about a domestic dispute, this guy would still be out there. Nobody would realize that he had committed identity theft and done the other crimes, and he wouldn't have been prosecuted, and ICE wouldn't have had its great headline to pop up on its website. This is about law enforcement cooperating with one another. And I can tell you that having worked on task forces for over half of my career, formally, and having worked with other law enforcement agencies throughout my entire career, that agencies do need to work together. You know, think back to after 9/11, when the complaint was that the agencies weren't communicating, they weren't sharing intelligence, they weren't working cooperatively. Well, now let's consider immigration laws. They are designed to make a clear distinction between people who are citizens and people who are not, and that's where the term alien comes in. It's not a pejorative or an insult to say that somebody is an alien. Under the immigration laws, an alien is defined simply as being any person who's not a citizen or national of the United States. I challenge anybody out there to tell me where the insult is in that definition. An alien is any person who is not a citizen or national of the United States. The open borders anarchists have a real problem with that term for one basic, fundamental, underlying reason. They know that the laws oppose their position. They know that their position flies in the face of common sense, flies in the face of morality. Well, now what do? You're pushing a position that's contradicted by law. You're pushing a position that's contradicted by common sense. You're pushing a position that's contradicted by the facts. And you're pushing a position that's contradicted by morality and decency. What's left? Use obfuscating language and try to intimidate people by making allegations. Oh, you hate immigrants, and that's why you want the border secured. Nothing could be further from the truth. And in fact, it's the lawful immigrants who are most at risk from illegal aliens. In fact, illegal aliens are most at risk when criminal aliens come into a community, because they extort them, they threaten to go to the authorities. Or even more sinister, even when they're here legally, they threaten to do harm to family members in their home country. If you don't do what we tell you, or if you go to the police, we know where your sister lives, we know where your mother lives, we know where your brother lives back home. And this isn't just in Latin America. This happens in the Russian community. It happens in the Asian community. It happens in the Caribbean community. It happens in all of the ethnic immigrant communities throughout the United States. The criminals come here, and the first thing they do is embed themselves in these ethnic immigrant communities, living among people who are most like themselves, and then they use those people by extorting their cooperation one way or another. This is not what the American dream is about, and this certainly isn't pro-immigrant to want to see this kind of lunacy continue. But we hear it all the time. You have to hate immigrants if you want the border secured. You have to be opposed to certain people if you want to have the immigration laws enforced. And you know, it's important to make another point. The very same laws that provide for the removal or the exclusion of aliens who pose a threat to our well-being, whether it's an alien with a dangerous communicable disease, or an alien who suffers mental illness and is violent or prone to sex offenses, an alien who's a convicted felon or a human rights violator or a war criminal, a gang member, a drug smuggler, a human trafficker, a money launderer, a pimp or a prostitute, all these characters. The people in the immigrant communities are most at risk from those thugs. So it's not about hurting immigrants. It's not about being opposed to people coming here legally. It's also about giving people citizenship and residency when they're entitled to it. And those very same laws that would keep out those undesirable aliens, undesirable again because they pose a threat, this has nothing to do with race, religion, or ethnicity, but because they pose a threat to the well-being. In addition to doing that, the immigration laws provide a pathway for more than 1.1 million lawful immigrants every year to come to America, be given a green card, and be immediately placed on the pathway to United States citizenship. The same laws that we're told are so terrible provide that pathway to citizenship for more than 1.1 million lawful immigrants each and every year. But of course, you don't hear about that from the folks who stand to make a ton of money because of immigration, whether it's the immigration lawyers, whether it's the corporations or the banks or the advocacy groups. No, they paint this horrible picture that the immigration laws were about discrimination, and they're not. They claim that this is the new civil rights movement to try to let all the people who are here illegally remain in the country. And in so doing, they trivialize the civil rights movement, which, of course, was an effort to right the wrongs committed against generations of blacks who were born in America, whose ancestors were dragged here against their will in the bowels of slave ships. That's what the civil rights movement was about. That's not what illegal immigration is about. This is certainly not about the civil rights movement. This is, again, about obfuscating the issue by making false claims and false assertions and propagandizing an issue that at its root, at its basic fundamental foundation, are designed to protect American lives, American jobs, and America's capacity to defend itself. So, incredibly, this is the lunacy that we deal with. The other article that I do want to talk about is I thought that it would be very important for me to do something else, and that's to talk about another article that I wrote called Waving Goodbye to Checks and Balances. And what I talked about is how the Obama administration has issued a bunch of checks, operating instructions or policy decisions that have the power of law. See, most people don't understand that no matter what the law says, the law becomes irrelevant, and so it doesn't much matter if the law isn't enforced. The laws of nature are immutable. You know, Congress doesn't get to vote on whether or not the law of gravity should stay in place this weekend. They can't suspend it. Okay? They don't get to vote on whether or not the speed of light in a vacuum should be altered. The laws of nature are immutable. They don't change. They're there cast in the fabric of the universe. Man's laws can certainly change. They can certainly be altered and modified. And if they're not enforced, it doesn't matter if the laws exist. If the laws are not enforced, it doesn't matter what the speed limit is. If you said that the speed limit on the highways in your town were 20 miles an hour, and then you took away all the radar guns and all the summons books from your cops, that stringent speed law won't much matter because people going 80 miles an hour would be able to get away with it. That's what some people don't understand. That's even what lawyers sometimes forget. You know, we'll have a discussion with lawyers. They'll say, well, but the law is very clear, Mike, if you do this or if you do that, you know. Well, that's great. But if there's nobody enforcing the law, if there's nobody making the arrests, how in the world can you then count on those laws making a difference? And that's what the Obama administration has done. This is their tactic. What they're seeking to do is to simply say, we are going to ignore the laws. We're going to twist the laws. And now most recently, they turned around and said, you know something? We're going to give illegal aliens a waiver that waives the fact that their presence in our country represents a violation of law. Stop and think about that. The law says you're here illegally, but the Obama administration, and remember, the President of the United States is not only the Commander-in-Chief of the Armed Forces, he's the Commander-in-Chief of all of the federal law enforcement officers of the United States. Whether you want to talk about the FBI, or DEA, or ICE, or ATF, or Secret Service, or the IRS, ultimately, they get their marching orders from members of the Obama administration's cabinet. That's why the president is called the chief executive. Execute comes from the word executive, or execute comes from the word executive. So the idea that we're supposed to execute the laws when we're federal agents. So if the guy at the top of the chain of command, the president of the United States, or the people directly under him, tell the agents, you're not going to make those arrests. Tell the adjudicators, you're going to give those people employment authorization, even if there's nothing to justify it. Then we have a severe problem. And that's what's happening right now. So that while the president knows he can't get certain laws passed through the Congress, he's found a new direction. You know, he found an alternate way of going. You know, the highway is congested, there's a car overturned, so we look to find a way on the side streets to get around the congestion. Well, the president has found an end run around the pesky business of checks and balance. You know, when the Supreme Court said that they didn't like components of Obamacare, he started to go after the Supreme Court, trying to intimidate them. This is a tactic of bullying. It's not the tactic that you would expect of our government. This is a democratic process that we're supposed to have in America. The idea is that too much power should not be vested in any one of the three branches of our government. That's what checks and balances is about. But the principle of checks and balances becomes subverted when the executive branch can issue operating instructions or policy statements saying, well, the law might say such and such, but you're not going to follow the law. This is what we're going to do. This waiver for illegal status in our country or illegal presence blows my mind. Because what it really tells aliens is that we don't care if you're here illegally. When the president and members of the Congress can talk about the need to place illegal aliens on the pathway to citizenship, think the message that this sends not only to illegal aliens who are present in our country, and that's certainly a severe enough problem, but imagine people sitting in their homes around the world, and they're thinking, gee whiz, do I want to take a chance of coming to America? Because, you know, we don't only have illegal aliens from Mexico. This isn't about Latinos in Mexico. Again, that's the mythology. Yes, it's true that we get more illegal aliens from Latin America because of geography. America shares a 2,000-mile border with Mexico. So, of course, we have lots of people running that border, and the border really isn't secure. When they get past the border, they're home free. But we do get lots of illegal aliens from the other countries around the planet. In fact, as an immigration agent, I spent years where I arrested people from countries as diverse as Israel and Greece and England and Canada, Japan and China, Jamaica, Nigeria, Ghana. So, you know, it wasn't simply about Mexico. It's about making distinctions about people as to whether or not they're citizens, whether or not they should be here. But you look at how many people live in squalor, or how many people have committed crimes and are seeking to evade law enforcement. So you pick up a newspaper and you see the headline. And what does the headline say? President of the United States is giving an unlawful presence waiver to illegal aliens who are in the United States. Members of Congress are talking about taking illegal aliens, and for having run the border, they will be rewarded with United States citizenship. Oh my gosh. Do you not think that this encourages ever more people to run our nation's borders, to come through ports of entry, to lie to the inspector in that booth? We have over 5 million illegal aliens in our country who did not run our borders, entered the country through ports of entry, and violated the terms of their admission. Do you know that a couple of years ago, CNN ran a story? In fact, Casey Wyand, one of the correspondents over at CNN, had me come into the studio. I did an interview with him. I did another interview with a reporter over at an Arizona newspaper. The estimated 5 million illegals in the country who violated their visas. There are fewer than 300 agents for the entire United States of America who were charged with enforcing the immigration laws and going after those visa violators. I mean, goodness, think of the odds. If you're one of 5 million and there are 300 agents who are out there on the hunt, and this, of course, has been now exacerbated by a president who has issued a policy directive that says that unless you've been convicted of a felony, we want you to stay here. Well, imagine if you spent years trying to get that visa to come to the United States. wouldn't you feel foolish? You know, I've compared this to the people who stand on a long line waiting to get into the movies. Maybe it's very cold out or very hot out or it's raining heavily and you're waiting on line so you can get into that movie theater. And then you see a whole bunch of people streaming in through a side door that somebody popped open and they don't even pay and they get better seats than you did because while you're trudging in through the back of the theater, they are already in the theater and you're paying how much money for your seat and they're there for free. That is what we are doing with immigration. And, you know, I've often made the point that you get one opportunity for a first impression. Immigration laws and our borders generally serve as that very first impression for millions of people around the world who seek to enter the country or who actually come to the United States. So we're in a situation where we've now got the world convinced that if you come to America, not only can you violate our borders and violate our laws and have an expectation of violating those laws and getting away with it, but of being rewarded for those transgressions. If you're running a terrorist organization, what does that tell you? If you can get some of your players into the United States, it's an easy matter for them to hide in plain sight. So let's go back to Latin America. Let's go back to a report that I had written a commentary about that was issued by the Pentagon about a year and a half ago. Now, right now in Venezuela, there are unknown numbers of Iranian shock troops, the so-called CUDs, who were stationed in Venezuela. Some of them have been there for years. They are living in a Latin American country. They are totally immersed in Spanish language, Spanish culture. They are very familiar with Venezuela. They've been there perhaps for 5, 6, 7 years. We have terrorists operating in the tri-border region of Brazil, where Brazil abuts with Argentina and Paraguay, training camps believed to be operating by Al-Qaeda, Hezbollah, and Hamas. Well, if you can run the border with the United States, which doesn't seem that difficult, and then claim to be from Latin America, it's very easy for Mohammed to transform himself convincingly into Miguel. So, again, what we've done is to provide opportunities for terrorists to enter our country across the Latin America, the Mexican-American border, as well as through countries such as the visa waiver countries like Great Britain, because we know there are naturalized citizens in Great Britain who've been involved with terrorism. They did have bombings in Great Britain and so forth. But, again, they have dual nationals who live there just as we do here. So we make it increasingly simple for people to cross international borders, to cover their trails by being dual nationals. They can use one passport to leave their country, whip out their second passport as they travel around the world and engage in skullduggery, return on their naturalization passport, whether it's a British passport into Great Britain or even into the United States, covering their tracks. And then, God forbid, the day comes that they get a tap on the shoulder or an email or a phone call telling them that tomorrow's the day. This kind of madness leaves us so vulnerable. And again, I need to be so clear about this. This is not about vilifying immigrants from any place in the world, but explaining to you that by not doing the job of screening those who would come here, our government has made it simple for the bad guys to enter the United States and set up shop here. And you know, you can't solve a problem until you're willing to acknowledge that a problem exists. When Janet Napolitano can talk about the fact that there is no spillover violence, and then in the same breath talk about how hundreds of American cities have become infested by the members of the Mexican cartels, my head wants to explode. What on earth is spillover violence in Janet Napolitano's world? It's funny because if you remember during Bill Clinton's administration, we were treated to a debate about the definition of the word is. You remember when they said, well, it depends on what your meaning of is. Well, today I'd love to know what Napolitano's definition of spillover violence is. It's not simply that errant round that comes across the Rio Grande and hits somebody on the United States side of the border. Spillover violence in my world, in any intelligent, reasonable person's world, would mean violence created by those folks who are able to make their way into the United States and do things that are dangerous or fatal to us. That's what spillover violence truly means. But incredibly, Napolitano is not willing to address this head on. We talk around the subject, discussions that are meaningless, pass for conversation on the news media. And if you want to talk about news media, and again, this is something that I will harp on and hammer away at as many times as I can, and I want you to give this some thought. We are told about how bad it is when there's profiling. We shouldn't profile. It's a terrible thing. Well, in point of fact, law enforcement has to profile. There are ways that profiling is legitimate. There are ways in which profiling can be a force multiplier. And I'm not going to have a major discourse about profiling. We're really close to the end of my program for today. But if you want to talk about profiling that's done in an absurd way and in a way that does incredible damage to America, folks, I want you to think about the politicians who talk about, or the journalists who talk about, the Hispanic vote, the mythical Hispanic vote, or the mythical Jewish vote, or the mythical Black vote. When you could look at people and immediately, just by knowing their color or their religion or their ethnicity, prognosticate, predict what they stand for, who they would vote for, what's of concern to them, you are profiling and you're demonstrating a level of bigotry that takes my breath away. And so here is my question. Why on earth would anybody suspect or come up with this hypothesis that lawful American citizens, perhaps members of the military or former members of the military who happen to be Latino, would be voting for candidates who want to ignore the need for secure borders, who want to provide illegal aliens with pathways to citizenship, who want to make a mockery of the laws who at their basis are designed to protect American lives and protect American jobs. It makes no sense. And if you listen to this nonsense and this constant drumbeat that the way that the politician can get the Latino vote is to vote for the Dream Act, to vote for open borders, to vote for a pathway to citizenship, you realize that it's insulting. Because what are they saying? That if you are a Latino American, you favor lawlessness. If you are a Latino American, you're not intelligent enough to understand that by not scrutinizing people who come into the country, that undoubtedly among those who come here will be people that not only may well take the jobs of those people within that community, but may include criminals and terrorists. When MS-13 sets up shop in a community, one of the first goals they have is to recruit young people into the folds of that gang. They're not looking to recruit white or black kids or kids of Asian background. They're looking to recruit Latino kids. So if you are an American citizen who happens to be Hispanic, why on earth would you not be concerned if gang members were setting shop up in your community and looking to recruit your children into that gang? Again, this is not about going after people based on race, religion, or ethnicity. The immigration laws are utterly, totally, and completely blind as to race, religion, and ethnicity. But there is this mythology that keeps on being spread every time they sit in front of the cameras and they pontificate like they're speaking with the wisdom of Solomon. And what are they saying? Well, if the president wants the Latino vote, then this is what he has to do. If you are here as a United States citizen, you're not looking to be legalized. You are legal. You are as American as I am. What exactly are they talking about? Why is nobody challenging them on this? And by convincing people that it's only people who are Hispanic who are illegally present in the country, what this does is force people to look at somebody who speaks with a Spanish accent or who has a last name that sounds Hispanic and say, wow, what if that guy's an illegal alien? What a disservice that does to so many great Americans who happen to be Hispanic. You know, I'm Jewish, and I know how many of my friends' parents changed their last name because they didn't want to sound too Jewish because they were confronting anti-Semitism. So some guy who had a real Jewish name would suddenly change it and he became Smith or Jones or God knows what because, you know, you can't sound too Jewish because that's going to be a problem. Well, in a manner of speaking, that's what all this nonsense, I fear, is also doing to Americans who happen to be of Hispanic origins. It's a disservice to them. It's a disservice to America. And I think it's convincing some cowardly politicians to make some very bad decisions that at the end of the day are not in the best interests of our nation, not in the best interests of our citizens. And that's really what people should be focusing on. You know, before I wrap up the show, I again ask that you jot this down. Please, please, please go to And Magazine. Again, it's Charles Faddis did a wonderful interview. I'm so proud to be a part of it at United States of Common Sense. And my website, of course, is talkborder.com on the And Magazine website, also michaelcutler.net. And finally, please go to the capsweb.org website. My goal has been and will continue to be to provide the kind of insight, the kind of discussion, discourse that's not being provided anywhere else. While I may not have all the answers, I think that having spent more than 40 years, and it's an incredible thought to doing anything for 40 years, when I look in the mirror and see all the gray hair, I guess it's true. I've been involved with the immigration issue for more than 40 years. I hope that you will take the time to visit those websites. I hope you will take the time to educate yourselves in the issues. If you like this program, I ask that you tell your friends and neighbors about it. I ask that you take your citizenship seriously, that you take your responsibilities as citizens seriously. You know, when you go to a restaurant, I'm sure that you're very definite about what you want to eat, the way that you want to have it prepared. I don't know anybody who walks into a restaurant and tells the waiter or waitress, just so throw some crap on the food on the plate, I'll eat it. We're very specific about what we want to eat and the way we want it prepared. I ask that you make our elected representatives just as accountable as you would that waiter or waitress who brings you your meal at that restaurant. I always like to make the point that democracy is not a spectator sport. So again, I will tell you that. Democracy most certainly is not a spectator sport, and I ask that you take your responsibilities as fellow Americans seriously. I don't care if you're a liberal or a conservative or an independent. At the end of the day, let's please all remember we are, after all Americans, and let's make that the focus and the way that we identify ourselves. We are all Americans. On that note, I wish you all a great weekend. Good night, everybody. See you next time.